You are Locked On Seahawks, your daily Seattle Seahawks podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Greetings, 12. This is Corbin Smith, your host for Locked On Seahawks. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my co-host in crime, Rob Rang. Glad to have you listening in. We're going to be looking at the latest in the Seahawks offensive coordinator search. Plus, we're going to be taking a look at how the NFL is going to handle the pre-draft process. A big event is not going to be going down this year. They've made some major changes with the COVID-19 pandemic. So we're going to break down how that affects the Seahawks and all 31 other NFL teams. Now for your lead story here on Locked On Seahawks. As we've been covering since last Tuesday's announcement that Brian Schottenheimer and the Seahawks were parting ways, there have been a number of candidates that have been thrown out there as potential replacements for the Seahawks for their offensive coordinator vacancy. Doug Peterson doesn't look like he's going to be an option now. Sounds like he's going to be taking a year off, and then he will try to become a head coach again in 2022. But Anthony Lynn's out there. Shane Steichen of the Chargers, Pep Hamilton, who was also with the Chargers. Those two names have been thrown out there. And now another name. The wide net of candidates continues to expand for the Seahawks. And this is another familiar face, maybe not a familiar name for Seahawk fans, but a coach who has worked for Pete Carroll previously and the last 2 years has been the running backs coach for the Las Vegas Raiders, Kirby Wilson. And again, Rob, we've seen this as a trend. They have been rumored to be linked to some passing-oriented coordinator options as well, but we know Pete Carroll wants to get back to running the football. He made that clear in his end-of-season press conference, and it's only fitting that you would interview a guy that's been a running backs coach for most of the last two decades in the NFL.
Yeah, and Kirby Wilson with the Raiders, you're talking about a long-tenured running back who has such an incredible past in terms of the places that he's been, the players that he's coached, running backs as well as fullbacks having all-pro and Pro Bowl seasons. You know, you're talking about a coach who has had a great deal of success, and there's two things about Kirby Wilson specifically that make me think that this is not just a casting a wide net type of a thing, that I think that this is actually a guy that people should really be paying attention to as far as being a very serious candidate for the Seahawks. You mentioned the fact that the Kirby Wilson is coached under Pete Carroll. And so just the familiarity there. Wilson was, worked with him back in his USC days. But there's two other things about him that really, jump out at me. And that being, for one, he is. We know that with the Seahawks, they have shown a tendency when it comes to drafting players of guys that have some type of remarkable story about them. Of course, Shaquem Griffin being, one of the great examples of that. But anybody who had some kind of remarkable story and persevered through something that really kind of strikes their attention. Well, Kirby Wilson survived a horrific fire when he was the running back coach, the Pittsburgh Steelers, during their playoff push years ago. So much so that he was actually put into a medically induced coma and survived through that. And he is known as being a coach that just loves to coach, is a really passionate guy, a fiery guy, the kind of guy that you can see on the sidelines getting people jazzed up. I mean, that screams Seahawks as well. And the other thing, you made a really good point a couple of days ago, Corbin, when we were first starting to talk about some of these different offensive coordinators and their personalities and how that some of these offensive coordinators, like Doug Peterson, who continues to be the one that I think I and many others have kind of clamored for, that if you go with a former head coach, maybe even a former offensive coordinator who has a big name for himself, then maybe it would be a little bit of too many Chiefs, not enough Indians kind of a thing, as far as that there would be some who would question who really is running the show. And very clearly, Pete Carroll is running the show. With Kirby Wilson, you're not going to have that same kind of question about. And this is a guy who's never been an offensive coordinator, who would be getting the opportunity of a lifetime here. And so I don't think that you have those same type of questions. And again, because of the way that his personality, I think that he would be somebody who would be easy to fit into Seattle's coaching scheme, their players in the locker room. I think he would just fit in. And then again, just from a technical standpoint, in terms of the way that he has been able to get running backs and fullbacks to be very, very successful, I think he fits in from a schematic perspective as well.
So there's a few things to unpack here. As you just mentioned, has never been an offensive coordinator, and that scares me a little bit. Obviously, there have, you know, every offensive coordinator had a first job, but for a coach that's been in the NFL as long as Kirby Wilson to have never had that opportunity and now have it presented to him, I can see that being concerning. But I do like the fact that you mentioned that he has been the coach behind the great success of a number of different running backs and fullbacks in this league. Maybe his presence is what it takes to bring in a fullback, a true fullback, and have more two-back offensive sets than what we have seen the last 3 years under Brian Schottenheimer. You and I have both been clamoring for that. And you mentioned the familiarity aspect. He was a running back coach the 3 seasons that Pete Carroll was the head coach at New England. He was a receivers coach for a year at USC under Pete Carroll when Carroll first went to coach the Trojans. And so they have worked together. It's been a long time ago, but these are two guys that are very familiar with one another. And Kirby Wilson knows what Pete Carroll expects. And with him being a guy that's primarily been a running backs coach in his NFL career, he does have the receiver coach background as well. He might know more about the passing game than what your typical running back coach does. And this might be a situation where you end up kind of having co-coordinators. I could see this being a situation if Kirby Wilson's your guy, that Dave Canales maybe is listed as the passing game coordinator, but he's also your co-offensive coordinator that's really in charge of implementing your passing game and your aerial attack. If those two are able to work together, maybe that's what allows you to balance Pete Carroll's desire to run the ball and Russell Wilson's desire to go out and cook.
Yeah, I think that makes a lot of sense. I think that he could absolutely play that type of a role, you know, and that's the thing. I mean, he, again, is coming from the Raiders, who, you know, everybody knows about Josh Jacobs, their star running back that they've had these last couple of years. And so it's easy to just pin the success of Las Vegas's rushing attack on just Jacobs. But Alex Ingold is the other, is their fullback as well, who was a Pro Bowl alternate as a rookie along with Jacobs just 2 seasons ago. And so Ingold, again, is just the latest in a number of fullbacks that have had a great deal of success Kirby Wilson here. I mean, he going all the way back to, you know, back in 2000 when he first jumped into the NFL, he was in New England. And then from there, it went to went to Washington. And in Washington, that was where Larry Centers really took off. And it had 81 receptions at a time when fullbacks just simply were not part of the passing game very often. And he jumped into, you know, several other places, going to Tampa Bay. And, of course, a lot of people remember Mike Allstott in Tampa Bay. You know, that's where they won a Super Bowl with, you know, Wilson as the running back coach with that dynamic duo of Mike Allstott, and it wasn't work done at that time. It was actually Michael Pittman. And then goes on to Arizona, where Edgerrin James gets a bunch of attention. Think about Pittsburgh. You think about Cleveland. You think about Arizona. And again, you talk about Larry Centers and some of the other backs that Pittsburgh and Cleveland are known for having. They're, you know, kind of pound and ground kind of a mentality of not only the running back, but the fullbacks as well. You know, even when you look at the teams that weren't very successful in terms of scoring points, like the aforementioned Cleveland Browns, I mean, what they did do well was in the running game, where Duke Johnson was a pretty dynamic player. He has not achieved that same type of success since. In Arizona, where David Johnson had a couple of dynamic seasons while Kirby Wilson was the running back coach, has not had that success since. So that's the thing is, to me, I look at all of these big names out there in the coaching trees, and I look at the players that they've been coaching, who they've been coaching. And some of these guys are just absolutely fantastic players. But I find me the coach that is able to make a Pro Bowler out of a player that does not have that success elsewhere or since. something that Kirby Wilson has shown an incredible knack to be able to do throughout his time. And then we talked about just the familiarity. Of course, John Gruden is the head coach with the Raiders, and his brother Jay Gruden. Jay Gruden, John Gruden, they both are very familiar with John Schneider. So it's not just that the Pete Carroll, it's the familiarity with Schneider as well. And to me, again, there's a lot of different things that if you kind of line them up and squint your eyes just right, you can see why Kirby Wilson would be somebody the Seahawks very much might be interested in.
And he's also been working with Tom Cable the last 2 years as the offensive line coach for the Raiders. For what it's worth, he was the line coach in Seattle for a long time before they parted ways in 2017. And I know that Pete Carroll still holds a lot of respect for Tom Cable, even though they had to make a change there with their offensive line a few years back. And so there are a lot of pieces there when you start putting them together. It adds up. And maybe my last takeaway here, I don't know if this is a good thing or a bad thing in this instance, but we know Pete Carroll is a defensive coach. It's interesting that Kirby Wilson actually was a linebackers coach at Southern Illinois back in 1991. And then he was the defensive coordinator for a year. And then he was the defensive coordinator at Wyoming for a couple of seasons. That was before he jumped to offense to become a running back coach and eventually make his way to the NFL. And so he actually, the only coordinating experience he has is on defense. But sometimes those guys end up being really good offensive coordinators because they have such a great understanding of what the defense is doing. And so it was kind of a peculiar name to get thrown out this morning, but now the more that you and I discuss it, it's one that kind of intrigues me. We'll see if he is a candidate that they are seriously considering. There are still a lot of names that are floating around out there. It doesn't seem like the Seahawks are necessarily in a rush to make this hire, so we'll just have to wait and see what happens. But Wilson's certainly a name to watch, given his familiarity with Pete Carroll and the fact that he is a running back coach, which may be just exactly what Carroll and company want going into 2021. When we return for the second quarter, the NFL draft is only a few months away, but the pre-draft process is once again going to be much, much different because of the COVID-19 pandemic. We're going to look at the league's decision to cancel the combine and what changes they've made to try to compensate for not having the combine this season. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. You're one of a kind, and so are your taxes. That's why TurboTax Live has experienced tax experts who are ready to listen to you, learn about your unique tax situation, and help you get the best tax outcome. Maybe you're moonlighting as a rideshare driver and have questions about what qualifies as a deduction. Maybe you want an expert to walk you through the process since most of your income last year came from freelance jobs. Or maybe you'd like to hand the whole tax filing process off to an expert while you perfect your banana bread recipe. Whether you want to file with the help of an expert or let an expert do the filing for you, TurboTax Live tax experts are here to help, giving you the confidence to know that your one-of-a-kind, uniquely you taxes are done right. Intuit TurboTax Live. This episode is brought to you by Top 10. Top 10 is an exclusive collection of 10 one-of-a-kind engagement rings designed by 10 of the most distinctive designers working today. Using only diamonds responsibly and sustainably sourced from Botswana, 10 design masters have each produced a uniquely beautiful diamond ring, launching exclusively on January 18th at BlueNile.com. This exciting limited edition collection of diamond engagement rings launches on January 18th, and you can preview it exclusively at BlueNile.com. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, Wednesday edition. This is your host, Corbin Smith, joined by Rob Rang. Betting on the NFL doesn't have to be a guessing game. If you listen to the new Locked On Bets podcast, hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling, get daily picks and quick hitting advice to make the smartest possible wagers. Subscribe to the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts. Last year, the NFL Combine, all of us have these stories. The last year has just been so different for all of us, Rob. The NFL Combine at the end of February was the last normal thing that I experienced before the pandemic started. I remember flying home from Indianapolis, working on a couple of articles, and obviously the news was already talking a lot about this pandemic, but it wasn't really hitting home yet in the United States. And then just a week later, we started to have new initiatives coming in where the government, the state government was putting in mandates for everybody to stay home and quarantine, and we know the rest. So this was really the last thing that we got to experience that had any normalcy, and unfortunately, it's not going to be happening this year.
is among the big tragedies that has recently with COVID. And, you know, there's so many other bigger stories, but for the 350 roughly players that get invited each year to Indianapolis, I mean, that is their big opportunity to be able to demonstrate their talents in front of the scouting departments, the coaching staffs of all 32 NFL teams. It's really the only opportunity that a lot of these players really have to be able to give themselves the apples to apples kind of comparison, because you're having players at the D3 level be able to compete against, you know, the national champions from Alabama on the same 40-yard dash or broad jump or bench press or whatever the thing, whatever the athletic test might be. And that is a media and so many fans are going to focus in on is the athletic testing. But the most critical part of the combine, Corbin, is, as you probably well know, is the medical testing. And so it's going to rob players of that opportunity to be able to get the clean medical grades from one facility in Indianapolis, that information is then disseminated to all the different NFL teams. It's one of the reasons why, frankly, Seattle was able to, I think, felt as comfortable as they did with the drafting of Daryl Taylor, is that has been widely reported that Taylor was one of the very last players that Seattle was able to bring into their facility and do some of their testing of him last year. So to me, that's the really big part about this. They're still going to be able to create some interview opportunities for players, and so that is going to be part of it, but it's just it's hard to imagine the NFL draft without the NFL combine, especially for a draft guy like myself. You mentioned that was the last thing that you would experience that had any type of normalcy to last year. I mean, I've been going to NFL combine since, how many years it's been now. So to just remove that from the draft evaluation process is really going to throw a wrench into the Seahawks and every other NFL team's plans for how they're going to evaluate the 2021 draft class.
Yeah, it was my first time last year getting to go to the combine. I'm just grateful that I got to go before everything just kind of hit the fan here just 1 week later. But it's just going to be different for everybody. It's more than just us writers not being able to go out to St. Elmo's. And quite frankly, I'm personally not a big fan of St. Elmo's, but that is the go-to place for writers and scouts and everybody else that's at the combine. And the ability to interview players in person, your reporters are not going to have those same opportunities this year. Maybe those prospects will be made available on Zoom. I don't know how all this is going to end up playing out, but there is no testing in Indy. It's all going to be done at college pro days. And no matter what the NFL says, it's going to be really hard to push for consistency when all these schools are conducting their own pro days. A lot of your bigger schools, it's going to be more consistent. The small school prospects, as you mentioned, it's going to be a lot tougher. Maybe some of those players end up latching on at bigger school pro days and they still get the opportunity to compete against some of those big name players from these D1 schools and show how they stack up. But it isn't going to be the same in that regard. There's going to be certain players that are going to get combine invites, and that's just to do virtual interviews. All visits are going to be done virtually and set up with the school. And this was the big thing that stood out to me. We mentioned the medicals, particularly with Daryl Taylor last year. According to the release that was given by the NFL yesterday, each club will be permitted to send one physician and one athletic trainer to conduct in-person exams, which will likely be scheduled over a 2 or 3 day period. So everybody in this process is going to be dramatically impacted by this. And I think if you're looking at this from a Seahawks perspective and really all 32 teams, as far as what this means, I think the biggest takeaway here, pro days are obviously going to be bigger than ever in terms of importance, but the Senior Bowl is going to be more important than ever. And we know the Senior Bowl is not going to look like it normally does either. I mean, everything is going to be dramatically different, but those Senior Bowl sessions, whatever they end up doing at the Senior Bowl, are going to be more important than ever because you don't have the ability to have that extra few days of evaluation at the combine. The weigh-ins and all that stuff is going to be extra important this year.
Oh, it really is. And that's the thing is that, the Senior Bowl, the East-West Shrine Bowl, the National College Gridiron Classic. I mean, the Hula Bowl is back. You know, there's all of these different senior all-star games are going to have that much more importance because, again, you're not going to be able to have that apples to apples kind of comparison between players being able to work out together. Of course, there's some levels of college football that did not have a season whatsoever. You have other teams like in the Pac-12 and the Big Ten that basically had just half of their season. And so those types of senior all-star games are really going to be critical to the evaluation of the 2021 class. And the Seahawks have used their evaluations from some of these all-star games as much as any team in the NFL. And that's what makes it that much more difficult, I think, for the Seahawks when you consider the fact that they have lost some key scouts over the last couple of years. Of course, Scott Fitterer, who has been with the Seahawks since 2001, moving on to now be the general manager of the Carolina Panthers. That's one of the sharpest eyes for talent in Seattle's building. And so he is gone. Ed Dodds is a terrific scout now with the Indianapolis Colts. He left a couple of years ago. The Seahawks have lost some significant evaluators over the last couple of years at a time when it's going to be that much more critical to be able to evaluate these players well. So again, the Seahawks have less draft picks and less experience in their scouting department. It's going to make it that much more difficult for them to be able to do the roster rebuild that this club clearly needs.
And I think that this is a good time to go back to the Jamal Adams trade, because I believe that one of the big reasons, and I think John Schneider actually has touched on this before, but I believe one of the big reasons that they were willing to give up the draft picks they did for Jamal Adams, obviously they wanted to bring him in because he's a very talented football player, but John Schneider realized this is going to be a very difficult draft to be able to prepare for. Because obviously scouts were not traveling all over the country to watch games this year like they normally do due to the pandemic. And so really it's going to be one heck of a litmus test for the ability of a scouting department to be able to adapt this year and not having as many picks. If there's going to be a season where you're going to be shorthanded with draft capital, this might be the year, because I think you could see a lot of really good players that are at lower level schools and maybe some of your diamonds in the rough that maybe have big days of the combine. There is a better chance that players like that are going to slip through the cracks during this process. And the fact that the Seahawks, most of their picks are on day three, they might be able to land some guys that under a normal season would go in the first two or three rounds, and they might still be available on day three just because of these different limitations that every team is going to have to deal with. You can say that for all the teams out there. That's, like I said, going to be the ultimate test for these scouting departments. What were you able to accomplish with these really difficult circumstances that all of us have had to deal with? It has not been an exception for scouting departments trying to handle a college football season that was unlike any we've seen before. A lot of teams only playing five or six games. There were teams out there at lower levels that played one game and then they were done. And we saw that with North Dakota State. They played one game as a showcase for their quarterback and that was their season. It was just a crazy year for college football. And we are going to see the ramifications of that and how this entire pre-draft process plays out. Like I said, it could work out in the Seahawks' favor, even with diminished number of picks, if their scouting department was able to find some of these players that under normal circumstances might have gone earlier, find them in the middle rounds. You can still salvage the draft. And if it doesn't go quite as planned, this is a year that you can maybe give all the teams an exception just because it hasn't been anything close to normal.
It hasn't been anything close to normal. And one of the things that you said there, Corbin, I really, really agree with and think that it bears kind of re-mentioning is just the idea that, the Seahawks do have a great deal of familiarity with their scouting department and their coaching staff. And that is one thing there that they do have a significant advantage over a lot of teams in the league. Obviously, every one of the 32 teams out there is facing the same challenges with the combine being canceled, with the limited number of scouts and coaches who could attend the Senior Bowl and things of that nature. But again, because even with the losses that Seattle has in their scouting department, the fact that they, for the most part, have a lot of the same scouts and a lot of the same coaches, they know what each other are looking for. When you look at some of the other franchises around the league, they're having so much turnover, whether it be this year or last year, that is going to make things that much more difficult. And again, you mentioned the idea of that the John Schneider and the Jamal Adams trade, and just recognizing that what a cluster that the 2021 draft was going to be, then I think that that is the year to possibly be a little bit more willing to trade some of your early selections for a player who is going to make an immediate impact. I mean, let's be real. I mean, the Seahawks have struggled to get any type of consistent impact from their first round picks, even in a normal year. To expect that they would be able to get that this year, I think would be even more difficult. And the Seahawks have had remarkable success on day three. And as you mentioned, that's where the majority of Seattle's current draft picks already are. So again, I think that considering all the different challenges, I think the Seahawks in many ways are actually set up a little bit better than most clubs are, because their first round pick for 2021 already made a big impact on their season just a year ago and is still under contract.
It's just going to be a really odd next couple of months, just seeing how different things are. And I don't think it's like this in a lot of walks of life right now, Rob. I don't think we will ever see the pre-draft process quite return to what it was before this pandemic. I think we'll eventually get back to where there's an NFL scouting combine in Indy again, or wherever it ends up being held. They were talking about making it a rotational event, but wherever it's at, I expect there will be a combine again. I just don't know that it's ever going to be the way it used to be. Now that we've seen we can successfully do things with virtual interviews and different things of that nature, I don't know that we're ever going to see the same process. And so maybe we got to start getting used to some of these things, and some of these changes may end up being for the better, and teams, the best ran front offices, are going to be able to adapt. And so I think that is an advantage for the Seahawks, because they were able to do it last year. I expect that they're going to be ready to go this time around and be able to handle all the curveballs that this health crisis has thrown the NFL and the rest of the world over the last year. When we come back for the third quarter, it's time for our weekly rookie spotlight. We're going to be talking about a player that unfortunately did not play a single down for the Seahawks in his rookie season in 2020, but there is some good news coming from that, and it sounds like he's going to be ready to hit the ground running for 2021. We'll be right back. You're listening to the Locked On Seahawks podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. Are we ready for some football? Coming up this weekend, it's championship weekend in the NFL. The Chiefs hosting the Bills in the AFC Championship game, and the Packers hosting the Tampa Bay Buccaneers at Lambeau Field in the NFC Championship game. There is only one place that has you covered and one place we trust, betonline.ag. Sign up today for a free account at betonline.ag and use the promo code LOCKEDON for your 50% welcome bonus. Welcome back to the Locked On Seahawks podcast. This is your host, Corbin Smith. Joining me for our Wednesday show, my good friend, Rob Rang. NFL analyst Brian Peacock and former NFL scout Matt Williamson host Locked On's Peacock and Williamson every Monday through Friday. Brian and Matt give you the national perspective all around the NFL, covering all the latest news and insight on every game, team, and move around the NFL. Get your picks and previews and much more every weekday with the Peacock and Williamson podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Subscribe where you get your podcasts. Last April, the Seattle Seahawks had 2 second-round picks, Rob. They ended up making just one selection in that round, made a trade to the New York Jets. That ended up being John Schneider's favorite trade partner last year, as we know with the Jamal Adams deal that happened a few months later. But they traded up into the mid-40s for the opportunity to draft Daryl Taylor. John Schneider and Pete Carroll viewed him as a pass rusher that could come in and make an immediate impact. He had 16.5 sacks, the most of any player his last two seasons in the SEC, playing against top-level college competition, a really good athlete with plenty of twitch, plays with physicality, seemed like the perfect fit for that Leo defensive end spot. Unfortunately, he was coming off of leg surgery. He had a titanium rod put into his leg to help heal a stress fracture in his ankle, and unfortunately was not able to turn the corner in his recovery as the Seahawks believed that he would. Ended up missing the entire season. We'll never know if he could have returned to the playoffs. It sounded like he was getting close to being able to play. Unfortunately, Seattle bowed out in the wild card round, so we'll never know an answer to that. But the plus side behind all this, with him being on the non-football injury list the entire season, he did not accrue a season. And so the Seahawks actually will have the ability to maintain his rights in 2024. They can still get 4 seasons out of Daryl Taylor on his rookie contract.
Yeah, that is very significant. Of course, if he would have been able to play for even one game, and you know, I think all Seahawks fans, and I'm sure Daryl Taylor himself, were all kind of clamoring to get him onto the field because he is a dynamic talent. He has been very productive against elite competition, playing outside linebacker as well as defensive end. And so you just thought that, hey, if they can get him onto the field, considering how much the Seahawks pass rush struggled for much of the season, then he really might be able to make that immediate impact. But the fact that, as you just mentioned, that he did not accrue a true NFL season, so therefore Seattle is going to have his rights for the next 4 years potentially, then that is going to, that's a big you know, big bit of news there. So that is significant. And then again, what also is significant is Daryl Taylor's just raw talent. As you mentioned, he is physical, he is long, he is explosive off of the ball, he really corners very well. One of the things that I really liked about him watching him on tape is that regardless of whether he was playing linebacker or defensive end, he had kind of a knack for knocking the ball out. He had 6 forced fumbles over his career. Again, this is going against SEC competition, and Tennessee wasn't very good. He was essentially kind of a one-man wrecking crew for the Vols there, and so teams were basically trying to scheme him away, and yet he was still that productive. Was not only a pass rusher, was also terrific as far as being tackles for loss as well. So this is a player that obviously everybody really, you know, connected to Seattle is disappointed that he wasn't able to make that splashy rookie impact. But at the same time, I think in his sophomore season in the NFL is going to be a big one because the talent is just too obvious.
And I was really encouraged by the last comments that Pete Carroll made coming out of the season, his end of season press conference, that Daryl Taylor showed that he belonged out there and he looked really fast, looked really athletic. And that was very encouraging because there had been some signs in recent weeks before he returned to the practice field in the playoffs. There were actually some signs that Pete Carroll and the Seahawks were not necessarily sure about his standing for 2021. And it looked like, do we have another Malik McDowell type situation on our hands? Luckily, that does not look to be the case at all. And so now they've got this whole offseason for him to continue getting stronger, to get his body weight up a little bit. From what I was told, his weight was down a little lower than they wanted with him being away from the practice field and all the things he was dealing with. They want to get him back in that 260-pound range so that he can be an every-down defensive end like he was at Tennessee. That's ultimately what they're looking for him to become, and especially if they have Carlos Dunlap coming back next year, you're not going to need this kid to come in and give you 80% of the snaps. You're going to be able to wean him back in just like a typical rookie because that's basically where he's going to be at. He has never participated in an NFL training camp. He was doing a few small little drills with dummies and stuff on the side, but he did not participate in a single practice the entire season until the playoffs. And so you mentioned him being raw. They didn't really have a chance to develop him because he wasn't on the practice field. So you've got to keep that in mind when you were looking at expectations for this kid moving into the 2021 season. But there's no doubt when you look at the physical tools, the effort that he plays with, that's what I always loved watching his film at Tennessee, is that you could see the effort consistently on tape. And there were times that he disappeared a little bit, but it was never because of the effort. He was always a guy that played tough. He does force the football out well, so he's got the ability to create turnovers. He's got good bend off the edge. He has a lot of the characteristics the Seahawks are looking for at that Leo position. Again, this explains why they were willing to trade up, and they felt they had to. They thought if they waited until their second-round picks, they weren't going to have an opportunity to be able to get him. And so they moved up quickly. They got their guy. Didn't get to see him play this year, but he is still very much a big part of their future, they believe. And hopefully we'll be able to see him going against top flight competition in training camp and holding his own. And maybe he can position himself to be a really good rotational rusher early in the season. Maybe he has a bigger role by the end of the 2021 campaign. I just think you have to temper your expectations a little bit when you consider that medically he was not able to get on the field until January. I think you just got to take a step back. If you're a fan looking at next season, yes, you're very excited, you're optimistic, but at the same time, don't just expect him to come in and get 10 sacks for you either. He's got to be able to develop. You got to get some of the technical stuff taken care of in his game. And I just don't expect right away that he's just going to be coming in getting sacks left and right. They're going to have to get some experience under his belt, and then maybe he ends up becoming that caliber of player.
I think that he can become that caliber of a player. I think that you're right to temper your enthusiasm a little bit, because obviously, again, he is coming off of the injury. That his body weight does look a little low, and there's been some pictures that have been circulated online, and he does not look like he's 255 pounds, which is what he weighed at the combine a year ago. At the same time, I trust my eyes, and I saw a guy that was absolutely explosive again going up against elite competition in the SEC. I was fortunate enough to go to the Senior Bowl last year. I remember interviewing him, Daryl Taylor, as far as, who are some of the players that you really look up to, who do you model your game after, and he said Khalil Mack, and there are elements of Khalil Mack's game that I see in Daryl Taylor, in terms of just the explosiveness, in terms of explosive speed upfield, the ability to change directions very, very quickly, and then explosive knockdown power. I mentioned before about the 6 forced fumbles. That's significant. And so it's not just hitting quarterbacks that don't see it coming, but knocking the ball out of the hands of the running backs just based on the power, the explosiveness of the initial collision that Taylor was able to generate. And so to me, those are all traits that translate very, very well to the NFL. I always kind of look at who are you going to be facing up against. And to me, one of the areas of concern that I had for Seattle this season was, how are you going to be able to slow down that absolute dynamic quarterback in Arizona? And, and to me, that was one of the real successes of this season, is that we saw Jordan Brooks' speed. We saw the way that the speed and the big hitting ability of Jamal Adams and Quandre Diggs really did change Seattle's defense. You add another speed rusher to this team, and I think that Seattle's young defensive players are going to be one of the real keys to their success moving forward.
And I think if you look at a player like Benson Mayowa that had such a strong finish, he's going to be a free agent again after just signing a 1-year deal last year. I think what Seattle chooses to do there with their limited cap space, I think he's a player that they are going to be working very diligently to try to re-sign. But if Carlos Dunlap is still in the picture, they're going to have to do some restructuring and extension of some sort to lower that cap hit, or I don't think it's going to be tenable. We talked about that a little bit in yesterday's show. But if they keep Dunlap and they believe Daryl Taylor is going to be able to be that secondary Leo rusher right away and eventually become a starter, I don't know necessarily that they're going to be able to dig that money into Benson Mayowa. So it is going to be telling to me what decision they make there. And obviously, if Mayowa comes back on a similar deal that's in the $2 to $3 million range, then he's fairly affordable. But if he's going to be a little more pricey than that, I think that will be telling if the Seahawks decide, you know what, we're going to just move forward with Daryl Taylor. If they are confident that he's going to be healthy and ready to go after being able to get on the practice field for a few weeks here at the end of the season, then I think, letting Mayowa go would signal we really believe that Daryl Taylor is going to be able to be a significant contributor right off the bat for us. And so I know the organization, they were disappointed they couldn't get him out in game action this year, but they get to start from scratch in 2021. You now have that extra season to work with that he can be under club control. They are still very excited, and rightfully so. When you look at the physical tools, the football skills that he brings to the table, if you're able to turn that ball of clay into a more refined pass rusher, look out. As long as he can stay healthy and that leg is not going to be a persistent issue, he still has a chance to really be a dynamic force rushing off the edge for the Seahawks moving forward. Make sure to follow me on Twitter at Corbin Smith NFL. You can follow Rob at Rob Rang. Subscribe to our show on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Stitcher, whatever your preferred podcast platform is, by going to our website, LockedOnSeahawks.com. Coming up on tomorrow's show, I'm going to be looking at 2 potential free agents on each team in NFL Championship Weekend that may interest the Seahawks this offseason, plus a first look at Seattle's draft picks and who they have selected with those picks in prior drafts. Enjoy the rest of your Wednesday. Go Hawks.